You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi there. Welcome back once again to I Never Thought It Would Happen, brought to you by my good self, Chris Difford, and the wonderful charity Help Musicians. Joining me on this episode is a young singer-songwriter who has achieved a lot in a short amount of time. A turbulent childhood led her to finding the solace of songwriting. She's toured since she was a teenager and released two acclaimed albums. She's now about to release her third, Who Wants to Talk About Love? It's due out in July. She's worked with Linda Perry and been championed by Sheryl Crow and toured with the likes of London Grammar, Hozier and First Aid Kit. She is the fantastic Jade Bird. So hi Jade, how are you today?
Hello, I'm really good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh,
I really appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure. And you know, you're just trying to get your technology working there. It's a bit like writing songs, isn't it? Sometimes you just plug in and nothing happens, and sometimes it just flows.
Yeah, same, all the same equipment, and something miraculously just happens. Yeah, exactly.
Are you a disciplined writer?
Yes, I'm an incredibly disciplined writer. Especially when I was younger, I did a sort of song a day. I'm pretty obsessive like that. Like I have a reading goal a year. I have like writing goals, you know? I like to keep track. I think in the world of distractions, it's kind of twice as important, you know?
So as a writer, do you work every day or do you have to be in that wonderful place of inspiration?
Well, I transitioned really. When I was a kid, I always had this sense of like, so I started writing when I was about 12. I always had this sense of I wasn't as good as I wanted to be. And I kind of wanted to treat it like anything. I always kind of use the analogy of being a painter. You know, you kind of have to paint 1,000 paintings before you can probably do something that's, unless you get bonus of on, which wasn't. So. So I used to write, you know, a song a day pretty much every day, try and see how many songs I could write a day. But now I feel like I'd like to bottle the inspiration up a little bit more.
Yeah.
So I have a special place in upstate New York that I like to go to. It's a studio called Clubhouse Studio. And I've recently been doing these spurts of like 8 days and just writing, you know, 10 songs in 8 days. And honestly, I found that to be almost I'm using those songs more than I would if I was writing at home. So it's changed, to be honest.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, sometimes need to get out of the house to write. Sometimes I have to go somewhere where my inspiration's going to be surprising.
Yeah, yeah. I think It depends what you're writing about, though, doesn't it? Like, and what your craft is centered around. Like, obviously, my songwriting is so centered around relationships.
Right.
And I think that's where I'm at my best. My second album, I sort of pivoted and did a bit more like character-based stuff. But I feel when I'm sort of writing about myself and how I'm navigating my world through these relationships, that's where I'm at my best. And I think that takes time and progression of those, you know?
Are you sort of okay about being very honest in front of your fans?
Well, you know, I wasn't. I've had a pretty tumultuous upbringing, and so I was very shy about it. I mean, shy is probably the wrong word, but I was pretty scared of being too honest about it all. And I had this moment, I wrote this song called Houdini. It's about my dad.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's a metaphor for a missing figure. And I released it, and I remember, I think it was NME or something, like Love NME, but they just basically were like, you know, Jade writes a song basically about a boyfriend. And I was just, I felt so amiss. I felt like the communication with the people who were listening to the song had not enough context to feel the true emotion of the song. And it bothered me. So I spoke to my mum, because there's a new song on this record called Wish You Well, about coming to terms with ultimately wishing my dad well, even though we don't speak anymore and haven't for years. So it's a really emotional song. And I just thought, I'm not going to let that happen again. So I'm going to open the doors and just, you know, protect the song, protect the feeling around the song, instead of maybe, you know, somebody is not there for me kind of thing. So, yeah.
It's a kind of therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cheaper than therapy.
A lot, yeah. A lot.
You sound like you're speaking from a professional point of view.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't even know. What was it? I don't think I even knew the word, like, trauma existed till I was, like, 16.
Right.
You know, neither we're in such I. a. Right? You know, we're in such a time now, I think, where it's, like, we're in the world of trauma. We're in that sort of post, that sort of post-untherapized generation. And I'm like, but it always has been. It's the thing that's there for you when nothing else is. It's like a journal, I guess.
Yeah.
Everyone sort of says the same thing, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't come across the word serenity till I was in my 40s. I mean, it just wasn't part of my language at all.
Or probably you.
Exactly, yeah.
Goodness. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And do you enjoy writing with other people, or do you just like to keep it to yourself?
Well, I was definitely egotistical in my younger years, and I had this sort of defiance that I was like, oh, I'm not going to write with other people. I think it actually came from a place of, you know, I could sense when I was first beginning to, you know, meet people who did it for a living or whatever. I came from a small town. I was gigging in pubs and clubs, and you hear about someone who's written a song for someone else, and I was like, okay, is like this the way you do it? You know, is this the way I'm able to make something for a living? And in the UK especially, there was this culture of younger artists getting put in with a plethora of songwriters before they'd even really, do you know what I mean, worked out what they'd written. And I was very against that. So I think that's where it came from. I was like, I want you to understand me first from my point of view before I would have someone help me do that or feel like the danger of diluting it. But artist co-writing, I think, is fascinating. Every time I've written with an artist, we end up with something so directly in the middle. You know, I wrote with this guy called Brent Cobb, who's, you know, Dave Cobb's cousin. And it's strange, I met Brent first before doing a record with Dave. And I remember us being in this little hotel room in Scotland, and I was just, you know, I was a kid, I was like 19, and he's just an absolute legend, like a big brother figure.
Yeah.
And we sat down to write, it was for Star Is Born, Dave was doing the soundtrack of Star Is Born, and we were like, oh, you know, we want to pitch something. And we wrote this song called Feet Off the Ground, and it's just such a beautiful moment of the beginning of me and Brent's friendship. And the song feels like it, you know, it's right in the middle of our sounds. It was a song I couldn't have written without him. So in that way, it's a really beautiful thing, I think, co-writing and collaborating.
But not for your own music?
Well, actually, now I've grown up a bit. And yes, I do primarily write by myself, and I still struggle sometimes to write with other people. But with this record I'm releasing now, I was in like a really difficult place emotionally. And therefore, artistically, you know, I felt a little bit lost in myself and so artistically, it was reflecting that. So I went in with a few people, and one of those people was Jen DeSilvio. She's a writer in LA. And that was the song I wrote about my dad. And I think it's so interesting because the chorus is, you know, forever see your face, hope not, I'm not filled with hate. And then the ending is, I wish you well. And it's not a conclusion I could have drawn myself because I was so filled with this hate and this anger and this betrayal.
Yeah.
So I needed someone to come in and say, I wish you well. And every time I sing it, I cry because I've not come to that conclusion and I'm coming to that conclusion through the song. So
you worked with the perfect person. Jen is such a treasure.
Right, yeah.
I worked with her last year very briefly, but it was enough for me to fall in love with her because she was such an inspirational person, so lively.
So lively. I mean, such a like strong person, but also has like the sentimentality to like understand these situations and understand the process and, you know, coming in with big topics that are ultimately like what you're going through. You know, she has a sensitivity I really probably couldn't have done it without, but she's absolutely incredible. Also being a female producer now and killing it like she does, you know, testament.
Yeah, she's so quick at it too.
Mm-hmm.
When you were younger and you were going through all those traumatic times, what sort of records were you listening to? Was it Leonard Cohen or?
Might not made it with Leonard Cohen. No, I think it was interesting. I remember my whole musical journey has been a strange one. My parents had me very young, so they were always into, you know, dance music, ultimately electronic music. So I grew up listening to electronic music and, you know, regular pop at the time. I was always into like the pop that felt written, but at the same time, it was kind of pop. And then my mum, she got into a really bad relationship actually with this guy that was, you know, used to play guitar, and I actually found quite a magical person. I think when you're young and there's a probably like quite narcissistic figure or unstable figure, they can look a little bit jester-like. And I think that's quite appealing. Yes. And you're young creative especially.
Wow, yeah.
So it had a huge effect on me while seeing, you know, ultimately him being so cruel to my mum. And he was into all this music that was like Johnny Cash and Black Rebel Motorcycle Club and, you know, almost like blues music. And I got the little Oasis black chord book. And then I just remember all these threads coming out, all these like little green shoots. And I remember just following them all. So Johnny Cash, like, what on earth is this? Follow, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And then you find like Glen Campbell or Bob Dylan. And that's where I think everyone who loves music is so enamored by that. Because you sit up night, you know, whatever on YouTube, or you'd go to the record store or whatever generation.
Yeah.
But it's that, oh, I found something that is speaking to me. Oh, this is new. Oh, you know what I mean? It's that magic. And I think that's where I started to really piece together my sound, when that sort of whole floor lit up, you know?
So although he was a bit of an arsehole, he brought something to the table.
And I think that's been really hard to reconcile with. That's why I've not really talked about it in interviews that much. I always say a family friend, or I always say,
yeah, of course,
you know, because that is a really hard thing to go through.
Yeah.
And my mum says as well, like, she's like, I hate that you had to see or go through any of that, but I am glad, like, you've fit to the guitar. I'm glad you found Johnny Cash. So it's everything happens, I guess, sometimes for a reason. I don't know what there is to learn from it.
So your first instrument was a guitar, was it?
No, weirdly, it was piano.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I go on and off with piano emotionally. I'm actually back on it now after like 3 or 4 years because I've just struggled with it. Because I had classical lessons at 7. They were free in school.
Where was school?
School was in Bridgend.
Yes, I know Bridgend.
How do you know Bridgend?
I used to run music workshops quite close to there. Yeah, so I know that part of Wales.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, me and Mum moved there when I was about 6 or 7. We moved back in with Grandma and I went to the school in Bridgend. Started these piano lessons because I've always been like, you know, only child of only children, so I'm like an ultimate show-off. And I always wanted to, always wanted to perform, always wanted to sing. So piano started, free lessons, and then honestly, that same time period I told you about, 11 or 12, I was writing all these lyrics, was writing all these plays, all these things, but had no way to sing them really. Piano was kind of a bit rigid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the guitar was just like a huge door.
Opened up.
Big waterfall. Yeah, it was huge. Yeah.
Did you go to Larn very often?
Larn, no.
Oh, that's near Bridgend.
Really?
And that's, yes, where Dylan Thomas was from.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So I have like a... Well, when I first... I don't know if I just say this because it doesn't really have a point, but I'd like Dylan Thomas. I feel like I'm not as schooled on poetry as I should be. I sort of suffer from a very like, you know, in my craft, I'm so literal and tend to gravitate towards quite literal things. So poetry, I think I'm going to get into it later on, but things like that I struggle with. And in my audition for Brit, you know, when I was like 16, I get into my interview with my mum and my mum's mentioned Dylan Thomas. And the guy was like, how'd you get into songwriting? For some reason, I said poetry, you know, he's lying through my teeth. And then he turns to me and he's like, oh, what, poetry? And I was like, Dylan Thomas? But I think I'm missing something, yeah. But I think I'm missing something, but I'll get there.
Do you enjoy the process of touring? Is it something that you like?
I think performing is one of the greatest things I've ever experienced in my life. It's like a cumulative release and direct feedback like loop. It's like this brilliant conversation you can have, this incredibly emotional conversation you can have with people right there. You know, it's one of the greatest things on earth. I love performing so much. Touring, to be
different
honest
thing.
With you, it's a living nightmare.
Of you course know? It is.
It's yeah. like, you know, you're huddled in the back of a plane for 10 hours and you go to another place and then you eat in bloody energy bars. You haven't seen an orange in 2 months. Do you know what I mean? It's, yeah.
That's a very good line for a lyric.
Haven't seen an orange tuba. But yeah, touring is the curse of the blessing, I feel like sometimes.
I agree, but there's nothing like the performance because you've got a contract with the people that have bought a ticket mm-hmm. and you're very much in that moment with them. Like you say, you know, there's you get that instant approval or disapproval of your songs.
Yeah. That's the thrill, I guess. I'm a bit like you just said, though. I feel like I've always felt this responsibility or like if someone's coming to see me, I want to like provide a show that's like, you know, good. I feel like some artists, to their own right, see shows as almost like a more self-orientated experience.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, I don't want to play the hits, for example.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to sort of do my own thing. And I find that quite interesting. I guess it's a ritual as such, but mine is certainly more, I do it for like the audience and in turn, it feels like this loop of good.
It is a loop. I love the loop. I love the loop.
Yes.
And, you know, I've been touring myself for like 50 years now and I never enjoyed it at the very beginning. I was very fragile and not very sort of in the moment, but now I really... can't have enough of it, really. I think it's a lovely thing.
Well, I have to ask you, like, what was your relationship and has been your relationship because you've toured for so long with home? Because I found it's really affected to the point where I can get quite low.
Yeah.
This feeling of home being this sort of mobile concept and never feeling like when I come home, I'm actually home.
Yeah.
And that can be upsetting sometimes. So how's that felt for you?
Well, I have to make myself home.
Right.
I have to be comfortable enough with myself that it feels like home, even though you're on a tour bus with like three or four other guys and, you know, you're bored and, you know, you don't get any sleep. I can't sleep on a tour bus.
Oh, Lord,
but then when
yeah.
you get to the show, you get that loop that you're talking about, which is wonderful. And so that gets you through the next day. The thing about home... for me, I think now is about writing. It's about I need to be in that safe place.
I just feel like writing for me has sometimes been something I reach for in points of instability.
Yeah.
So maybe that's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
It feels like it levels everything out.
Yeah.
You know?
And like your analogy of it being like painting, I often think of it being like photography. You take a snapshot of something, then you put it in the chemical, eventually it turns into a black and white print. And yeah, it takes a while. It takes a while.
You know, I love that so much because I've been so obsessed with how my songs somehow decipher my fate or have told me things that I only realized years later. Mm-hmm. So I love that analogy so much because I feel like sometimes when you first write it, you kind of go like, what the hell is this about? Like, you know? You really don't know. And then years later, you go, oh, Lord, you know?
I wrote songs 40, 50 years ago. I still don't know what they're about when people ask me. I haven't got a bloody clue.
Oh, my goodness.
Hi there, I'm Chris Difford, and this is I Never Thought It Would Happen. And after this, some more answers to your questions. Thank you.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Message and data rates may apply. Or consult a doctor prior to use.
Wow, you look amazing. What have you been doing?
I'm sure you've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and the other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, I found this great company called Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe medications like Ozempic and Wegovy and other GLP-1 medications that are 80 to 90% less expensive, all 100% online.
I can get GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% less and do it all online? No doctor's office or pharmacy?
Yes, Zelthy can provide semaglutide or tirzepatide, the active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s. But for 80 to 90% less and ship directly to your door.
How do I get started with Zelthy?
Call #250 with the word care to get started today with Zelthy. Get the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less and 100% online. Don't wait. Call #250 with the word care right now for a link to your exclusive offer. Call #250 with the word care. That's #250 with the word care. #250 and care.
This is a message from Sylvia. I think my question for Chris would be, what advice would he give to an artist today when we're up against the streaming music model and an effective pay-to-play live mode? My advice, Sylvia, is just to get up in the morning, write great songs, and let everything else take its place. This is a message from Susie Wall. What's the secret to a positive collaboration? Is there something that feels fundamental to a productive and enjoyable experience for all involved? It's a really good question, Susie Wall. I think it's about sharing. Not everybody can play centre forward in a team. Some people have to go and make the tea or peel the oranges at halftime. I think it's very important that you just learn to share. You've got to know what your differences are and what your similarities are and make them all work. So, yes, it can be productive if you pull together and just be mates. Thanks, Susie. This is a message from Chris Welch. I was wondering, Chris, what is your favourite of the Squeeze songs you've sung lead on? And the same question is regarding your solo songs. My personal favourites are His House, Her Home, Love Circles, Striking Matches, Slaughtered, Gutted and Heartbroken. And a selection of your solo songs, I would say 1975, No Show Jones and Tightrope. Well, Chris, interesting question. No Show Jones, not one of my favourites. Tightrope, however, very much is. From my very first solo album, I had no confidence whatsoever as a singer during those days, but Francis Dunnery, who produced the record, did a marvellous job of getting me to the microphone and getting me to focus on my vocals, which I'm pleased to say I still do today. As regarding Squeeze songs, of course, Call for Cats is the one everybody really knows me for, and I used to find that a right pain in the ass. But I've kind of got used to it, and I really enjoy it now and discover different things about that song every time I sing it. So, thanks for your questions, Chris. How do you deal with mental health and well-being when you're on the road? You don't. You don't, do you? I can tell.
It's tough. I think I have a quite northern culture. You know, I've got a lot of northern family, and I think there's a lot of emphasis on being like a strong person. And I have like a bit of a pack horse work ethic when I was like touring. And it leads to this very predictable cycle of work, 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 and then just explode and crumble and have to build myself up and work, 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 work. It's really unhealthy. And I still am guilty of probably doing the explode thing. That's why I think my songs can sometimes be so deep and so dramatic, really, because I do go to these pretty, you know, dark places or like low places, and I have these huge fears I ignore for 90% of my living experience, you know, because I ultimately want to have fun.
Of course, but
you know.
So who do you have to lean on when you get to the corner of the dark room?
Well, I've had a really strange experience. I toured with my ex-fiancé for 5 years.
Yikes.
So through it, yeah, it was crazy. And in the beginning, it was great. I was 19. It was my first touring experience. I'm riding a high of just being able to do what I've dreamed of doing since I was 10 years old, you know. With that comes this fear of like, I will do anything to do this for, you know, as long as I possibly can. But I think trying to maintain that fervor and that, like I said, work ethic while belting every night for an hour and a half, you know, I do sing pretty forcefully. And then going back to the hotel room with this one person on the same plane, in the same airports, in the same hotel rooms, on the same stage, it was a very claustrophobic experience that I don't think I quite realized until probably after COVID, where it all started to fracture and crumble. But it was pretty unique experience that I was in a capsule with another person for 4 years, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess in some ways, sorry to answer your question, that was a support that became, you know, a little bit like I think I had to shake out of it, you know, it's sort of been binding.
Do you have a mentor? Spiritually or emotionally?
Yeah, I think, well, it's interesting. I think people serve as mentors in my life. Like, for example, like my mum is a huge mentor. My mum's the person I will call when I get to that point. She's the one who understands how my mind works in that sense of bottling it up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's a huge inspiration. Like, I've literally watched my mum's journey from coming back, moving in with my grandma, no job, you know, like having to start again with a kid. When she was my age, she had a 7-year-old. And I think that has been so impactful on just who I am and how I meet everything in my career and everything. But more professionally, I meet with Linda Perry what seems to be once every year. And I find her so, she has this really good outlook on it that like understands the seriousness of it, but it's also like, you know, just chill out, kid. Do you know what I mean? Don't just take it with a pinch of salt. And I find that always quite reassuring.
Yeah. What do you think about the music industry now? Because it's changed even in the short time that you've been involved in it.
I don't like to be too negative.
No.
It's really tough because there's an element of like, it's really cool. Everyone says you can be independent. You can release music. Your career's not over when some guy at a label says it's over. You see that all the time. People having second lives. I've chatted with this singer-songwriter called Matt Maltese, who I just adore. He's such a beautiful person.
Yeah.
Incredible artist. And he told me, you know, Jade, without that little spurt, I think he had a little spurt on TikTok, and he'd already done 2 or 3 records at that point. And his whole career got this second life. But without it, you know, in the old days, it might have just been a closed door and Matt would have got a normal job and we wouldn't hear the beautiful songs and all he has to say now. So really positive. Negative is probably like, if I wasn't in music, I wouldn't want a phone. I wouldn't want an Instagram. I wouldn't want a TikTok. It brings me no joy. I find it quite embarrassing, to be honest. I'm like, oh God, I've spent these hours on my phone. Like, oh, I feel just mortified.
Yeah.
I want to learn. I think it's informing my craft. And I'm honestly petrified that because I am consuming all this stuff that everyone else is seeing and almost being fed to me, you know, I'm not doing what I said to you about the shoots and following and as much. I'm petrified it will make my art more generic.
Yeah.
And it's making art more generic on a larger scale. So that's the sort of doom scroll of the of the opinion. But it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I remember being 18, 19, and there was obviously no Instagram or social media in those days. And the wonderful thing was you had to get on a bus to go and get a record. You know, you get on a bus and go to London to HMV, you buy a record. And now if I want to listen to something on, I just go to Tidal and it's there in a second.
Yeah.
It makes it instant. And, you know, when I record my own stuff, I think, what's this about? You know, it's kind of gone before I finished it. It's weird.
Well, yeah. And also I think what's so cool about what you just said is like, I would have got on a bus to buy records. So then you've bought, say you're going to buy, like, you know, what would have been a record you would have gone and bought the other memory of.
Well, yeah, I mean, so this is kind of off the wall, I suppose, but I remember reading that a band called the Allman Brothers had recorded a live album, live at the Fillmore. It was a double album. I got on a bus, I went to HMV and I bought it. And when I got home, I played all four sides of it. And I'm still playing all four sides of it. It's amazing.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. You sort of associate the memory of and the journey with. Yeah. And who, like, but it's like what you thought about on the bus. And it's just, it feels like it's like interweaves itself into your life so physically. I think there's a real danger because it's like that physical connection. People are like, oh, concert tickets get so much more expensive, but people are still paying. It's like, yes, because you're tying this physical thing back into, you know, what's almost become ephemeral.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know. I hate phones. I really do.
You write a lot of personally about your stuff, your own life, obviously, in reflection. Do you also, like I do, making up characters and giving them their own life?
I really do. I did a lot of it with my second record. There's a track on there called Red, White and Blue. It's about my ex at the time. He used to buy and sell guitars and he flew over, I think it might have been Ohio. He flew over to buy this guitar from this veteran and it kind of turned into quite a sad story from this guy called Herb. And I think there was a lot of healthcare problems and he was in a bad way. So he was flipping this guitar. Like I put down the phone to my ex. He told me the story. It was chaos, you know, couldn't get cash, you know, the whole thing. He's like, you know, are you trying to scam me, boy? Like, you know, it's a bit of a chaotic story. But put down the phone and wrote about it. I think I found music. Maybe I'm at my best when it is that personal connection because it's why I started. So to be honest with you, I've started kind of novel writing and putting characters there because I do have such a desire to
well done.
Like you said, yeah, trying is a very, very different craft.
You've got to have discipline for that.
Oh my goodness. I'm like, I need a mentor in that case because it's so different to songwriting. It's so less instantaneous and more laborious, but it's fun.
Are you interested in musical theatre? It seems like a lot of people of your age and my age indeed have started to venture onto the velvet stage, as they say.
Weirdly, I am not. I think, you know, apart from my, what did I do? The Wizard of Oz when I was 14. You know what I mean? I did have a little, like, got my red shoes, my red slippers on. But no, I struggle with acting. I often feel like, especially nowadays, it's almost easier to be an actor and meet success with the music afterwards, but I can't act.
What about placing your songs in a musical, theatrical way?
Well, I think it's interesting I think there's a real craft to musical theatre writing.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to watch a lot of, you know, The Sound of Music, and I mean, I can't watch it anymore for various reasons, but The King and I, and they had these songs that you still can just like, they're almost nursery rhyme-esque, which is why like, that's why I respect pop music, because it's like, I can hear it once and, you know, do-a-dear, you say it back to you. I think there's a real craft to that that I would have to treat as a separate thing. I wouldn't know if I could just go in and be like, I'm going to write a great musical theatre soundtrack. I think when you get that right, you get like, you know, Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I don't know if that level has almost died of being able to write Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, that's very true. In the kind of style of Sondheim, for instance, that would be very difficult to copy that.
Yeah, because even, you know, Wicked is, I love Wicked and I absolutely adore Cynthia Erivo, and like, I thought it was like amazing, but I don't know if I could sing you a song from Wicked.
No, that's true.
You know, apart from that riff, and I was talking to my friend about it, and it feels like that with musicals. Like even, I'm trying to think of like the last one, major one, like Hairspray. Like maybe it's because I'm not into it, but...
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Whereas if you mention something like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, you can probably sing them all inside out, you know.
Do you know what I mean? And so that's why I think with musical theatre, I would be a little bit like, yeah, it would be great to be like, yeah, I'll go in and write a bunch of tunes. But I think it's a whole different craft
genre,
that I kind of respect. Yeah. It's the same, not to keep blabbing on, but it's the same thing as when you go to old 60s music, something I've always wanted to be able to do is like every lyric, the chord will resonate to the exact lyric. So it's very like, I love you so much, major chord, but I'm letting you go, kind of like the suspended minor chord. And I'm like, oh, it's that is a whole new level of writing music, you know?
It's deep.
It's not random. And I think that's quite fascinating.
Yeah. And working with a script that's not yours could be quite complicated, I would imagine, anyway.
Yeah, it's more you just, like I said, I just would want to write something that feels like it had that classic nursery rhyme thing, I'm not sure if that's possible.
Okay, and what's in your year in this wonderful 25?
Oh, I am releasing my third record, which I'm really excited about. It's taken me, I think, 4 years, 5 years. It's been a long time, a lot of life lived. So then just probably, you know the drill.
Yeah.
Touring it, and I've actually almost finished the one after it as well, so we'll see.
What about the UK? Do you tour here?
Yeah, we've actually, you know, I don't know if I can probably, because, you know, announce it, but Glastonbury I'm doing this year, and Latitude I'm doing this year, so I'll be back in the UK.
Okay, well, just to let you know that the songwriting workshop that I ran, which Jen has been at and excelled
in,
is at Glastonbury.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, we have a house which is just on the perimeter. It's a big, big Georgian mansion, and we can sleep.
Oh, that's amazing.
16 people. We have a marquee with food and drink. So if you're at a loose end and you want to join us.
Oh, I would absolutely love that. I would absolutely love that, genuinely.
Yeah. Oh, Jen had a great time, and we had Christina Perry there last year.
Oh, lovely, yeah.
Yeah, and she was, well, very emotional songs were written.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah.
I mean, yay.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds incredible. I would love to.
Yeah, so you're welcome to come by. It's there, and I do it every year there. And I have my own stage, so people get up to perform with me. You don't have to do a squeeze song and do any song you like, but it's quite good fun.
I think that would be good fun. Yeah, yeah. I'll choose one. I'll let you know which one I can do justice and which ones I can destroy.
Well, I've managed to destroy them all through my life. So.
That's really funny. Oh, my goodness.
So help musicians, which this podcast is for, is incredible, really, because it gives out so much money to musicians that are on the back foot.
Yeah, which is a lot now, yeah.
Particularly during COVID, they gave out £20 million to people all over the UK.
Oh, my goodness.
It's such an incredible feast of love and support. Have you ever been involved in anything like that?
No. Like I said, I'm pretty surprised. And I mean, as you know, it's I basically can't get on a plane to go on tour without making a huge loss. So,
yes.
You know, it's really tough out there right now. I don't know how anyone's really doing it.
Isn't that true? It's just like, oh my, especially in America, it's really expensive.
Yeah. I truly don't know. Yeah. And it just feels like everyone keeps saying, you know, I saw Jimmy Page post like a thing the other day. It was a long thing and it was really well written. AI is really bad. The UK government's not putting in protections. It got to the end of it and I was like, but now what? You know, we feel like it's such a weird place where no one can kind of come together to change it. So, I mean, yeah, need stuff like that more than ever, I think.
Yeah, it's a wonderful charity. It was started by Edward Elgar.
Oh, amazing.
He had a violinist who was in an orchestra who'd passed away and the family didn't have enough money to bury him. So they all chipped in and that's how the charity began.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's good to keep together.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and it's been lovely talking with you.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. Genuinely, thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed our chat.
I'm going to come and see you. And I'm going to email Jen right away and say, I'm so jealous. You've been working with Jay Bird.
Let me know what she says. Oh, my goodness.
I certainly won't.
Oh, bless you. All right. Well, I'll see you at Glastonbury then.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Thanks for your time.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Anytime. You take care. Bye-bye.
I really enjoyed chatting with Jade. She's quite a laugh, really. She has a wise outlook on music, and now I just want to sit back and enjoy it for myself. Sometimes it takes a lot of time for a young artist to find their voice and their feet, but given she started writing songs at the age of 12, she was fully equipped by her teens. So I'm looking forward to hearing her new album and where she goes next. Hopefully, a novel at some point. It really was an extraordinary chat. If you want to know more about the amazing work that Help Musicians does, then take a look at their website, follow them on social media like I do, and please consider donating a little money to the charity. They do incredible work supporting musicians of all types across the UK, changing people's lives for the better. And don't forget, I'm taking your questions about anything music-wise, from writing, recording, touring, and everything in between. Your well-being, maybe. Send your questions to chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. That's chris@helpmusicians.org.uk. And please subscribe to the podcast. It makes all the difference. Keep coming back. I Never Thought It Would Happen is a Give Me Sugar production for Help Musicians.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.